James, I'm an alcoholic.
I'd
like to thank Dale for asking me to speak. I've been out to this meeting a few times over the years with a bunch of guys from my home group have come up here. We've had a bunch of you guys. Sam and Billy were talking before the meeting. I might have spoken here before, but I don't. If I did, I don't remember. So I'm going to think of this as the first time. My sobriety date's December 1st, 2009. I have a home group. It's the Outlaw Safe Cracker Group in Richmond. We meet on Mondays and Thursdays at 7. So if you guys are ever in town, look us up. We'd love to have you. And like I said, we've already had a bunch of guys here come down and speak. And I know they're not going to be the last. This is a good group. I always enjoy coming up here. It's always hard for me to start when I speak because I just a couple reasons. I mean, one, I just I get really terrified of whatever everybody's going to think of me. As long as I've been sober, that's never really completely gone away. And it takes a few minutes for me to just realize like, oh, nobody, you know, just tell the truth. You're going to be fine. Nobody cares. And this is funny. That's something this guy who'd been around a while told me the first time I ever spoke in a meeting. It wasn't like, yeah, you'll be great. He was like, dude, nobody cares. Just get up and do your thing. Like, as long as you don't hit somebody or you know, do something crazy, like you're going to be okay. But I never thought I would end up in AA, you know, in a million years. I mean, I know most of us don't, but to me, when I was growing up, I didn't have any warning signs. I don't come from an alcoholic family. I've got some alcoholism in my extended family, but my immediate family, my parents, my siblings, I got three siblings. I'm a triplet. I got a brother and a sister the same age as me. None of them are alcoholics. They can all just drink like normal people. And the more I stay sober, like I used to like kind of cringe when AA speakers would complain about this because I thought it was kind of tacky, but it's true, which is regular people drink. The way they drink is just boring. I don't for the life of me, I cannot. It seems like the longer I stay sober, the less I get it. But they can just drink. They can just have a beer, you know, put it down, pick it up when they want to. It's the weirdest thing. That is never a trick that I learned. But I started drinking when I was 18. So by AA standards, I was kind of a late starter. I was on a high school field trip to Italy, and I growing up before that, I didn't really ever thought about drinking much. I hadn't been around it much. I grew up in Palatine County, came from a pretty stable home. My parents both drank normally. Like I remember my dad always had, like, he would buy a case of beer and throw it in the fridge or throw it like under the sink for parties or whatever, and it would just stay there. You know, he would have a beer every once in a while, or he'd like to have a glass of scotch at night on the weekends. And he'd buy this big bottle of Dewars, like this huge jug that would just last him forever. Well, it would last him forever until I started drinking. then it would last him like a week. It just wasn't, drinking wasn't really a thing. I never really thought about it that much. I mean, the only reference I had for alcoholism was like, I used to watch Cops, and there'd be drunk people on Cops all the time. And, you know, I didn't want to end up on Cops. So drinking didn't really appeal to me that much. And I don't think I'd ever actually seen anybody drunk before the first time I got drunk. But anyway, I was 18 years old. I was a senior in high school. I was on the art program at Palatine High School. It sponsored this trip, and a bunch of students there, they sent them all to Italy. And I don't even know how I got in that, because I wasn't that into art. And I had failed an art class the year before because I just didn't care about it. But somehow, like, I kind of found myself in the airport in Rome. And we're there for a week, and we're going around doing what you do there, seeing all the sights and eating pasta. And in Italy, to this day, I actually don't know if they have a drinking age. I think they might, but I know I was 18 and I looked like I was about 12, and I never got, you know, every bar I went to, you know, nobody ever told me not that I couldn't drink. They gave me whatever I wanted. And I would have a beer here and there. Like, we'd go out to eat and I'd have a beer with dinner because everybody else was doing it, and I didn't really think anything of it. But the last night we were there, all the other kids on my floor in the hotel decided they were going to have a party. They were like, look, you know, we're not going to be able to drink legally again for like 3 years. So we need to, you know, we got to make this count. So we were in Rome, and we went down to the train station. And there's this, for some reason in Rome, they had this giant liquor store in a train station. And like everybody brought their backpacks, and we just bought all this booze and shoved it in our backpacks and went back to the hotel. And I wasn't really that excited about it, but I wanted to fit in. And I was a scrawny, nerdy kid. I didn't have a lot of friends, and I wanted to be part of the gang. So we get back to the hotel, and everybody starts drinking, and I start drinking just because that's what everybody was doing. And I mean, for some reason, I didn't really think about getting drunk because I had had like, you know, I like I said, I had had a beer, maybe two beers here and there. It didn't really seem to affect me that much. But this time, I don't remember all of what I drank, but I had a couple of rum and cokes, a lot of Bailey's Irish cream. At one point, I was just facing a bottle of wine. But I got absolutely trashed, and up to that point, that was the best night of my life. It was the best time I had ever had, and I didn't like. I mean, I didn't know it was possible to feel that good. It was just like it was like a religious experience. I mean, it was sorry, and just a little interjection. I'm gonna be coughing a little bit. I'm okay. I had a flu or a cold or something about 3 weeks ago. The cough just really hasn't gone away. So, but like I'm fine. I ran. Ran a few miles this morning, so I'm not about to keel over. I didn't see that coming. But I was just such a, when I was a kid, I'd always been really shy, kind of dorky. I mean, I played sports. I was a decent athlete, but like the only friends I had were the people that I would play soccer with, or the guys on the track team or whatever. I'd always wanted to, had this feeling of like what we like to say in AA is I wasn't a part of, you know, that's what I wanted. It seemed like everybody else had that. I mean, and you know, hindsight being 2020, that wasn't the case. You know, I think most teenagers are pretty neurotic and insecure. I just didn't know that. So I just thought I was so different. And when I got drunk for the first time, all that just went away. You know, I just felt like it was just, you know, all this stuff that had been going on in my head about, you know, how, what does everybody think of me? Like, you know, there's girls here. Do they think I'm ugly? Like what's, you know, and like all this teenager crap, just, it was just gone. You know, I could hang out. I could have a good time. I didn't really care what everybody thought of me. And I just, you know, when I'm drunk, it's not that I don't care what people think of me. I just know that I'm awesome. And I'm assuming everybody else, I just assume everybody else knows that too. But it was the best time I'd ever had. So we got back, to the U.S. and I was about to go to college, and I just, you know, pretty, the course of my life just changed. You know, I wasn't what you'd call an ambitious kid. I was pretty lazy, but you know, I'd gone to VCU, or I'd applied to VCU and gotten in. I figured I was going to do something with, it's kind of into history. I might do some with that or I don't know, something. I was thinking about what I was going to do with my life. And after the first time I got drunk, I did not care. You know, the only thing I wanted to do was drink. You know, what was the rest of my life was going to work itself out. But I just wanted, you know, I want to know when I'm going to be able to drink again, how I'm going to get it, who I'm going to be able to drink with. And that's pretty much all I thought about for the next 5 years. So to kind of make a long story short, because for some reason I always get hung up on when I was drinking. And the weird thing is I don't have a really dramatic drinking story. Like I don't have a rap sheet. I don't have any funny drinking story. Well, the way I like to drink is at the beginning, I would like to go out and party. And then when I turned 21, I'd like to go bar hopping. But after a while, I kind of found the best way to drink, the way I really like to drink, is I get a bottle of something and then just like hold myself up in wherever I live or somewhere where nobody else can get to me. And then just drink until I can't drink anymore. So there was a lot of that. My drinking is just a lot of that. The next few years, I went to VCU. I was there for about a year. I mean, there's not really much of a record to prove it because I had no grade point average. I enrolled in a bunch of classes, failed every single one of them. And I couldn't even be bothered to withdraw. Cause I mean, I wasn't there to go to class. I wasn't there to get an education. I wasn't really there to do anything but drink. And that's what I did. I made a ton of drinking buddies. For a long time, I thought of my year of college, the year I was at college, just the best year of my life. I mean, and looking at it from the outside, Like everybody else in my family was just like, they thought it was just catastrophic. I just didn't care. So I dropped out of college, moved back in with my parents, went through a bunch of just really menial, kind of no dead end jobs. I would get a job, and the way I saw work back then was just, it was, work was just a way to get money to drink. So I'd get a job wherever I could. Like I worked at worked for a sign company for a while. I worked at a shipping place, kind of like a UPS store. Worked at a restaurant for a little while. I seemed to fit in the best there, which is not uncommon. And ended up working at this organic produce farm in Palatan, which is the job I had for, I think it was about a year, year and a half up until I got sober. And if you know anything about me, you know how that working at a produce farm is probably that's not really something that I want to do. Not a huge fan of nature, or farming or like anything involved in that. Like I have to force myself. I'm 38 years old. I got to force myself to eat vegetables. The reason I ended up in that job is that's the only job I could get where I knew they wouldn't say anything if I showed up drunk every day. I'd just gotten fired from my last job, and the guy that ran this place was really, he was really lenient with me. And I would show up half in the bag and get half of whatever they wanted done, and they still paid me and let me come. But I mean, throughout that I was working, and then I would, whenever I wasn't working, I would just drink as much as I could. I'd still, in the beginning, I still had a lot of drinking buddies from VCU. So I would go out to my job, which is most of the places I worked at were in Powhatan. I was living with my parents. So I'd go work for whatever I had to do. And then as soon as I was off of work, I would drive down to Richmond and then party. And that lasted for, I don't know, a year or two. But eventually a lot of those people just stopped wanting to be around me because they weren't alcoholics. I thought they drank like me, but, after a year or two, most of them started getting in it. You know, they're still in school and they're moving towards graduating, going to graduate school, getting jobs or whatever. And they're not really up for going out and getting trashed on a Tuesday night anymore. which I didn't understand. I just thought they couldn't hang. I blamed it on weed because they were all a bunch of potheads. I'm like, well, they just stopped that stuff and just came out of the bar with me. Everything would be fine. But I would do stuff like, I mean, towards the end of that, like I would do stuff like I'd get off of work, go buy a case of beer or a bottle of whiskey, and then just show up at somebody's house unannounced and be like, hey, you want a drink? And then be like, no, I'm going to bed. And then so they would go to bed and I just end up drinking on their couch. And then, so eventually I just started drinking by myself. It was hard to get people to come out with me. And one thing I found out was turns out that's the best way to drink. At least that's the way I thought about it. It's as much fun as I used to have drinking with other people. And I thought drinking was what made being with other people fun. You know, it made me come out of my shell. I felt like I was the life of the party. But the problem with that is everybody else just didn't seem to be on the same page as me. You know, you kind of had to follow a few rules. Nobody else seemed to want to drink as fast as me. Nobody wanted to drink as much as me. I mean, when I started drinking, I always assumed that everybody was on the same page, that we're going to drink it, that we pass out or something happens. One of us gets arrested. We run out of booze. Somebody runs into a wall, something. and that's not the way most of the people that I knew liked to drink. So I started drinking by myself. I would hold myself up in this room in the upstairs of my parents' place. And I loved it. And it's one of the things that really later on that made me kind of bond with my sponsors. When I got to AA, I didn't trust anybody. It sounded like I kind of thought it was a cult. It was really weird. We kind of have our own lingo here, which is a little off-putting for somebody who's, I mean, I was 22 years old and who's new. And my sponsor just talked about how much he loved drinking by himself. And I'd never heard that before. I'd always heard of drinking alone is like a bad, sad thing. And when I was in college, I remember one of my friends saying like, yeah, when you start drinking alone, that's when you know you're an alcoholic. And I was like, well, I guess I'm good. I'll never do that. And then I started doing it and I was like, ah, shit. I'm sorry. I don't mean to. I usually don't swear when I talk. It's not going to, That's not gonna happen again. But I, you know, I loved it. It just seemed like it was it kind of put me back in the place that I was when I first got drunk. I was kind of at peace. I could have a good time. I mean, I don't know why I thought of it as a good time because there was literally nothing going on. But I just kept doing it. And eventually, after a little while of that, and I don't know how long it was, 6 months, a year, maybe a year and a half, a couple of years, something like that. I started trying to stop, and it was a long time ago, so I can't really pinpoint what it was that made me want to start trying to. I wasn't really trying to stop. I was trying to cut down on the amount I was drinking. And I don't know what, I mean, it might have just been because I was watching Intervention a lot. So back then, it was like 2007, 2006, something like that. And Intervention was on all the time. So, you know, I'd start drinking, turn the TV on, and there was an episode of Intervention. And I guess enough of those, I was just like, well, maybe I don't want to end up on this show. So, like, maybe I should do something about this. And before then, I kind of wondered if I had a drinking problem because I just noticed that other people around me didn't seem to drink the way I did. And, I hadn't really had any what we call consequences, but I got pretty lucky. I had a few run-ins with the law in Richmond and in Palatine, and I was always able to get out of it for whatever reason. I just, you know, I never got charged with anything. I got a lot of talking to from law enforcement. But I just, you know, I don't know. I thought maybe, yeah, drinking's a bad thing. My life doesn't really seem to be going anywhere. Maybe I should just kind of get this under control. And I couldn't. it's not really dramatic, but I was pretty amazed at how not only is it was did not seem to be possible for me to not drink, it didn't seem to be possible for me to drink any less than the amount that I was drinking. And I started just thinking it started out just thinking like, all right, I've been doing this a little too much. This is looking a little too much like those people on that TV show. So maybe I'll take it easy tomorrow. Like, you know, tomorrow I'm not going to go to the liquor store. I'm going to go to bed early. You know, I'll wake up and go to the farm and actually do what they want me to do for once. And then, I would do that, or I'd plan on doing that. I'd wake up in the morning. And I was sure that I wasn't going to drink. There was no reason for me to drink. It always seemed to be sunny when I had that motivation. Like birds were chirping, everything was perfect. And I was like, this is just what I need. You know, I'm gonna have a day off. I'm not gonna end up like those people in Intervention. I'm gonna get a handle on this. I'm gonna go, you know, maybe I'll go back to college and like, you know, get a life so people stop yelling at me. That just never seemed to work. At some point during the day, I always ended up at the ABC store, and I couldn't understand why. I mean, it wasn't something that I thought about from the moment I woke up. A lot of the time, I had no idea that I was going to drink until a minute or two before I went to the liquor store, but it just always happened, and I couldn't figure it out. And I'd never been able to stop once I started drinking. I always knew that about myself. And I didn't see that as alcoholic. I just thought I was, you know, immature, which is true. When it comes to drinking, it's a little different. But I just thought, you know, as long as I don't start drinking, then I'll be fine. And I could not figure out why I couldn't not start drinking. And this just that this happened. So I started getting really obsessive about it because the more that I couldn't stop, the more worried I started getting. And it's just day after day, this started to happen, and it went on for a couple of years. I was just trying to cut down, trying to stop, and nothing would work. In fact, the amount that I was drinking started going up. And I tried, I would say I tried a lot of different things. That's not true. I'm pretty lazy. So I mean, the one thing I tried the most was trying really hard not to drink. But I mean, there's some stuff I tried, finally moved out of my parents' house because I thought maybe that was the problem. I was at this point, I'm like 19, 20 years old and kind of a deadbeat. I'm like, you know, maybe if I like get my own place, that'll help. So I got an apartment with a buddy of mine that I'd gone to college with, which was, that was the worst decision he ever made. But I mean, in my defense, he knew me pretty well, so you should have seen it coming. But that, you know, I thought that was going to fix me, and it didn't. That, you know, that poor guy, man, we moved in together, and within like a week, you know, and looking back on it, I didn't realize how much I was hiding the amount I was drinking from other people, because he thought I was just like him. Like, you know, I'd go to work and then party on the weekends. And, you know, within like a week, he's coming home and I'm trashed pretty much all the time. My bedroom looks like a landfill. It's just nothing but empty liquor bottles. And he was just like, like, what is going on? And so that, I mean, that didn't work. And I ended up moving back into my parents' place. And this is shortly before I got sober. At this point, I've been trying to quit drinking for years. I'm still working at this. I'm still hanging on to this job at the farm that somehow I never got fired from. And to this day, I don't know how I never got fired from it. I pretty much have no life. All I'm doing when I'm not working is drinking. And I'm at the point where if I stop drinking, I don't know what's going to happen physically. You know, I'm pretty sure I'll be okay, but I'm starting to get a little shaky and sweaty. If it's been too long since I have a drink, I started to get really paranoid, which is a weird thing. I always thought I would always like hear stuff. I always thought people were like whispering. I remember one time I was in my apartment. I was convinced that my roommate and his girlfriend were in his room, like whispering and like talking about me. So I had like my ear to the door for like 5 minutes, and then I realized they weren't there. But I mean, that kind of stuff was starting to happen. And I had given up on trying to quit drinking. And I just kind of thought that, I guess this is the way it's going to be. And I didn't really, I don't know. I wasn't suicidal or anything like that, but I just didn't, I was kind of out of options or out of answers. I just thought, you know, I guess I'm just going to keep drinking until something happens, because there didn't seem to be anything else I could do about it. But what happened was, I didn't really expect this. It was generally, I was living in my parents' place, but they had a big house. And everybody else, like all of my other siblings, had moved out. So I didn't interact with them a lot. I was just in this like this room on the second floor of their house that they never went in. And the cat peed in it, and I didn't clean it up because I knew if it smelled like cat pee, they definitely wouldn't go in there. So that's where I drank. I didn't see this coming. But one day I got home from work, and my dad just chews me out he like basically asked me why I'm drinking so much. Which hadn't really happened before. I mean, I'd gotten chewed out for some of the, for crashing cars and disappearing for days and some of the trouble I'd gotten into, but never, you know, he'd never really gotten on me just saying like, hey, what's going on with your drinking? This time he did. And it wasn't, I guess it was kind of like an episode of intervention, but it was more like me and him, and he was just yelling at me. That was kind of, I saw that as kind of an opportunity. And I don't know, beforehand, if you would have told me it was going to happen, I wouldn't have expected that I would have thought of it like this. But after getting chewed out for like an hour and a half or 2 hours, I kind of thought, you know, it's maybe if I tell somebody else about this, I can actually do something about it. So I was honest with them. I was just like, look, I don't think I could stop drinking. I don't know what to do. And he suggested I go to a meeting, which I didn't know much about AA, but I'd seen the South Park episode about AA where they kind of made fun of it and made it seem kind of lame. So I said, I don't want to do that. But I also had watched a lot of Intervention, and I was just like, well, you know, I know a lot of people get sober by going to rehabs, and I thought I was going to go to one. Like, if you ever see that show, the people that go to rehab there, they always send them to rehab in like Florida or Southern California or someplace that's really awesome. So I thought, you know, I kind of thought of that. I was like, well, maybe if I play my cards right, he'll pay for me to go to one of those places. So I told him that. I was like, I think I need to go someplace. And he was like, all right. I ended up going to a place in Williamsburg. His insurance was paying for it. And apparently Florida's expensive. It's not the beach, but it's closer than Richmond. So I guess it was good enough. But I went to rehab. And when I was there, I did honestly want to be sober. It wasn't, you know, I wasn't there to get my dad off my back. I just remember being really tired because I had been trying to quit drinking kind of, you know, on the sly for so long that I was just sick of it. And I hadn't thought that I was going to be able to do that. And I was like, you know, this is an opportunity to do that. But that's where I was introduced to AA. And I remember going to this rehab. I was down there and they did all this intake stuff. And then the second night I was there, there was this group in Williamsburg that brought a meeting in. I'd never been to a meeting before. The only reference I had was, the South Park episode, and my grandma on my dad's side, who's his stepmom, she's not a blood relative, I knew was in AA. But she'd been sober since the 80s, and we never talked about it. My dad just kind of mentioned it one time. But that was it. And so I was just like, all right, well, you know, well, I'm stuck here, and they're bringing a meeting. We'll see what this is all about. And it was a speaker meeting. It's kind of like this one. The guy had been sober like 15, 20 years. And the guy started talking. And I know a lot of people, when they first come to AA, their experiences, they felt like they were at home and felt really comfortable. And that was not my experience. I just thought this, I remember halfway through looking around, just being like, what the hell kind of Jesus camp is this? Like, I didn't understand that. It just seemed like all this guy talked about was God. He was using all this really weird lingo, like saying stuff like resentments and phenomenon of craving and just like stuff that just, it didn't sound normal. And I was just like, oh my God, I'm in a cult. Like nobody told me this is a cult. Like, I've seen 2020. I know what these people do. After the meeting, we went out to smoke at this little gazebo out there that you could smoke in. And everybody, it seemed like everybody else there was really into it. They were like, oh, that guy was great. He was phenomenal. I got so much hope from that. And like in my head, I was like, that man was insane. But I didn't want anybody to not like me. So I was just agreed with him. I was like, yeah, it was fantastic. So that was kind of that was my opinion of AA for a long time. I didn't really do any more investigating. I didn't talk to people in AA. The month that I was in rehab, more groups would bring meetings in there, and then they would buzz us out the meetings. I didn't really pay attention. I'd go to the bathroom a lot, so I'd have something to do, so I didn't have to listen to what everybody was saying. I got a sponsor because they told me if I didn't get one, they'd kick me out. But I called him once. Actually, I don't even know if I ever called the guy. I talked to him once and I was like, hey, would you sponsor me? He's like, yeah, sure. And then I told the counselor I had a sponsor, and that's pretty much it. I just got this idea. So the whole month I was there, I didn't drink, and I just had this idea that, you know what, I think I can do this myself. I don't need these people. This is weird. Like, I don't know, half the time I don't know what the hell they're talking about. And you know, the meetings just seemed, I mean, I was 22 years old, so everybody just seemed really, it's like somebody who's 30 seemed really old to me. So it just seemed like I was going in all these rooms with a bunch of old guys sitting around talking about NOM, which if I actually listened to what people said, that's not true, but I didn't. So I just, I don't know. I didn't really take it seriously. And I got out of rehab. I ended up going to Sober House for a few months. And I went to meetings there first because I had to. And then I realized I didn't really keep track of if you went to meetings. And then I kept going for a couple of months because I was still kind of scared that I was going to drink again. You know, the memory of the years I tried not to drink and not been able to was still there. So I was a little afraid. But the longer I stayed dry on my own, the more I had this idea that I was just better than everybody in AA and I could do this myself. So eventually I stopped going to AA. And to kind of make a longer story short, so I get out of the sober house, I move back with my parents. I decide that AA is for losers, and I think I told my dad that, and he was like, yeah, I don't care. I basically became the same person I was drinking. I just was sober or dry. In AA, we like to say dry. I just wasn't having a drink, but I was still just kind of a recluse. Like, I hung out in my parents' place. I eventually ended up getting a job at a department store, but I didn't go out. I didn't see anybody. I was really irritable all the time. Everybody in my family hated me. Like, I got along so much better with my family when I was drinking than I did my first couple of years sober. One of my sisters had moved back. She lived in Massachusetts, and she moved back home right around the time that I got back from the sober house. And she, a couple months later, she moved to Texas to get away from me. And I know that because she told me that when I made amends to her. But I was just miserable. You know, I didn't have a life. I didn't have anything to do. So I would walk around my parents' house all the time, complain about stuff. And, you know, everybody else would look at me like I was insane, and because I kind of was. And they would be like, well, you're 22 years old. Why don't you just move out? Or, you know, they would have like, you know, they would say profound stuff like that. But I just couldn't. I was so used to doing what I wanted to do when I wanted to do it that, I just couldn't see what everybody was saying. The only thing I could think about was me. So I was kind of a deadbeat on my parents' couch for a couple of years until eventually, what always happens with alcoholics is start thinking about drinking again. And to this day, I don't know why I didn't actually take a drink. Because that's not the way that it was before. You know, usually before, if I started thinking about drinking, it was a couple minutes before I was on my way to the liquor store. But this time, for whatever reason, I didn't. But I don't know, maybe I was just still afraid of it, but sure couldn't stop thinking about it. It was kind of on my mind all the time. And I remember being in my parents' house and just remembering that they had all this booze there that they never drank. And I was thinking, you know, my dad had that big Dewar's jug that, you know, that I used to steal from, but I haven't stolen from that in a couple of years. So it was probably nice and full. And I couldn't get that thought out of my head. I didn't know what to do. I mean, I thought I was going nuts. So I started seeing a shrink, my experience with that wasn't, I feel like psychiatrists sometimes kind of get a bad rap in AA, but my experience with that guy wasn't bad. But he had worked with a lot of alcoholics, and he was like, you know, I told him what was going on. I was like, yeah, I haven't had a drink in a long time, and I'm thinking about drinking all the time, and I think I got some kind of anxiety disorder. And he was kind of like, no, I think you're an alcoholic. You should probably go to AA. And so that's what I did. I ended up going back to AA. And at the time, it just felt like such a loser, which is funny because I actually was a loser. Like, you know, you could objectively say that, but like, you know, and I'm walking into an AA meeting and everybody there has like stuff going on. You know, they all have like cars in their name and jobs, and you know, they pay bills and do all the stuff that regular people do. But I was just like, God, I'm stuck with these people now. I guess I'm going to be hanging out in church basements for the rest of my life if I don't want to get drunk. So I hung around, came back to AA, hung around meetings for a while, and didn't really do anything. I thought that if I just go to meetings for a little bit, see how much time we got. Oh, we're good. If I just go to meetings for a little bit, then I'll stop thinking about drinking, and this will all blow over, and maybe that shrink I'm seeing will give me some kind of pills or do some kind of like voodoo that he can do that'll make me better. But that didn't happen. I started going to a meeting every day, sometimes twice a day, and I just couldn't stop thinking about drinking. So eventually I started talking to the people at meetings and telling them what was going on, and they said the same thing the shrink did. They're like, yeah, it sounds like you got alcoholism. And they would suggest that I get a sponsor and take the steps. And I hadn't paid attention enough before, didn't know. I mean, I kind of knew what the steps were, but not really. And I didn't think it was going to work. I thought it was a little like, you know, I thought the 12 steps were a little bit something like a Tony Robbins book or like a secret. It was something that some people say they got a lot out of, but it's not really a thing. You know, I just didn't know. I mean, it's looking back on it, if you're like I was and you come to AA fairly often, but you don't ever engage, and all you see is people coming in and out. It seems like a lot of people, it can seem like it doesn't work because you see a lot of people picking up white chips. You see a lot of people doing what you do, disappearing and coming back for a while because things aren't going well. But, you know, later on, once I got to know a lot of people in AA, I realized that wasn't the case. Long story short, I'm going to meetings, can't stop thinking about drinking. Everybody tells me to get a sponsor, and I finally decide that I should probably do that. But I had this list of stuff that somebody who was going to sponsor me had to hit. And the big one was God. I wasn't down with the God thing. I didn't really have any trauma or any bad experiences with religion when I was growing up. I grew up Catholic. I thought it was really boring and I didn't want to go. And then at some point when I was drinking in my drinking days, I just decided that God didn't exist. And anybody who thought God was a thing was probably an idiot. Which is that's about as deep as I went, but I would, you know, I'd like to try to convince people that I thought about it a lot more than that. But it was really just a way for me to think that I was smarter than everybody else. I didn't, if anybody, one of my rules was when I was looking for a sponsor, if I saw a guy talk about God, he was off the list, which kind of made it a problem because everybody talked about God. And eventually I saw this guy share, and he said something like, it was something like, you know, I'm not religious. I don't know if I believe in a religious God, but I know there's something out there that's keeping me sober. And at that point I was like, all right, I'll take what I can get. That's good enough. So I plan on asking him to sponsor me. And I didn't, but I just couldn't work up the nerve to do it because I was still the same person I was before I started drinking. I was just a really shy guy. I couldn't talk to people. I was terrified of what people thought of me. What eventually happened was he started talking to me. That guy became my sponsor. He's still my sponsor today. And nothing, I don't think anything has ever stood out about him to me as the way I met him. So I'm at this meeting, Jay Walker's big meeting in Richmond every Friday. And I'm hanging outside smoking, trying to look cool. So I was still back at the age when you think smoking makes you look cool. He walks up to me out of nowhere right before the meeting and starts talking to me. And he just, you know, asked me how I'm doing, how long I've been sober, what's going on. And I hadn't really had a lot of that before. I would go to meetings and people would say, you get a lot of like, hey, good to see you. Keep coming back. They give you a handshake and, you know, walk away. And there had only been a couple of guys that had really taken time to talk to me. But this guy really, like, he just would not go away. He just started, he started talking about his drinking. And he didn't get really dramatic. He started telling funny stories about how he used to drunk and, like, pee all over himself. And I used to do that, too, but I didn't tell him that. He was just really, really friendly. That's something I hadn't experienced in a long time. So he was talking to me for a long, it was probably only like 5 minutes, but it felt like a while. And then he goes into the meeting, and a couple minutes later I go in, and I'm on my way to the back seat because I always sat in the back with the other new guys. And he sees me, he's like, hey, where are you going? And I'm like, well, I'm gonna go sit in the back. I usually sit in the back. And he's like, well, I'm gonna sit up front. Why don't you come sit up front with me? And I didn't have a better idea. So I was just like, yeah, sure. And I sat by him and he kept talking to me. He kept talking about the way he drank. He told me why he likes to sit up front. That's the reason you meet anybody that's been around for a while that wants to sit up front, because that's in AA, that's kind of where the action is. You know, I want to be as close to the message as possible. And that's what he told me. And, told me a lot of stuff, and he was just the nicest guy. You know, I didn't get any airs from him. It seemed like he was having a really good time. Like, he just really wanted me to be okay. And then he called me the next day, which was just unheard of. I think one other person ever had called me in AA. I saw him at meetings. I think every meeting I went to that week, I saw him at, and he would always, you know, he always wanted me to sit by him. And then eventually, like after a week, I was like, all right, I have to ask it. I figure out how to ask this guy to be my sponsor, because I was thinking about that anyway. And he's such a nice dude. So I asked him, and he started taking me through the steps. Like I said, he's been my sponsor ever since. But it's just, I still think about the way I met him, because I wasn't, you know, I was new, but I wasn't new. People had seen me around, and I wasn't a guy that, I didn't pick up a white chip. I didn't raise my hand and say I was new. You know, I wasn't showing up to the meeting drunk. I was just some guy. But he took time out of his day to talk to me anyway. That made such an impression on me. And it still does. Because it's just, you know, in AA, when I come to, a lot of the time when I get to a meeting, especially if I go to my home group, it's on a Mondays and Thursdays. I usually go there right from work. I actually have a real job now, so I have to pay attention and do stuff that's kind of hard. So I'll get there. I'm tired. I don't want to talk to people. I just want to be able to sit down and chill out and maybe have a cup of coffee. And if there's, you know, there might be somebody there that I don't really know, but I've seen around for a while. My first thought is, in fact, at no point usually does it enter my head, yeah, maybe I should see how that guy's doing. I'm just like, you know, at best, it might be like, oh, yeah, it's good to see him again. You know, but this guy, he didn't do that. You know, he came up to me, and just him by him talking to me for a few minutes, that just that completely changed my life. But this anyway, this guy took me through the steps. I actually learned what the 12 steps were. I had a lot of problems with the God thing when we were going through the steps, and you can always tell the people that I had problems with it because we call it the God thing. but he was pretty, I don't know. I expect this guy, so after I asked him to sponsor me, I remember telling people that I got a sponsor, and I told him who it was. And he had this reputation that he was, everybody thought he was some kind of hard ass. That's just never, and he, to some extent, I guess he still does. That's just never been my experience. But he was just really patient with me. And, you know, I would try to start arguments with him about, you know, God and, you know, like, you know, what I thought were kind of original arguments, but pretty much whatever anybody wants to argue about, God argues about, you know, like, why do people suffer and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, he would just be like, look, man, you don't have to believe in God or anything right now. I'm not here to tell you what to do. And I remember him, one of the first things he said to me when I started whining about that, he was just like, man, I can't run my own life. I don't think I'm here to try to run your life. But he just said, you know, right now, all we're asking when we get to, when we got to like the second and third step, he's like, you just want to make a commitment to go through the rest of the steps. There's concrete actions here. You know, there's not a lot of woo-woo. You're not going to sit around and do transcendental meditation. Like, we're not going to break out a gong and do yoga. Like, there's stuff here that it's pretty easy to do that we can actually do. And if you make a commitment to do this, by the end of it, you're going to find something. There'll be something that works. There's some kind of power. I don't know what it is, but there's something here that keeps me sober, and, you know, it's going to work for you too. And I mean, that was enough for me. I mean, I still kind of like bristled against it for a while, but, you know, I didn't have any other options. And, the other thing that really impressed me was just the way he talked about drinking. And he talked about drink the way I like to drink. He always, you know, when you ask him about drinking, usually the first thing he says is, I drink like a pig. And, you know, only another alcoholic will understand that. But yeah, so I knew, as much as I didn't like the God, the whole concept of God, the idea that God was going to keep me sober, I knew that this guy obviously drank like I did. And he had been sober 12 years at that point. That's a long time. And there was something that was working for him, because I hadn't had a drink in 2 years, and I was walking around every day terrified that I was trying to figure out how I was going to go through the rest of that day without going into an ABC store. And he wasn't worried about that. He was just going about his life. So there was something going on there, and that was enough for me to trust him and do what he was asking me to do. and I'm not gonna go through all the steps one by one. Mostly because I don't. That's like one of my pet peeves when speakers do that, and like yeah, well, the first step was like, oh my God. I get why people do that, but also when I was new, that's usually when I would just check out. But we went through the 12 steps. And I started, he asked me to start sponsoring guys. And, I remember I was still struggling with the idea of God when he told me to start sponsoring people. And I thought that was like, that I couldn't, because I was like, well, I think I'm still not sure about the God thing. And he was just like, yeah, I don't care. Trust me, you'll be fine. Just go help somebody. And I think that's the key to AA, you know? And to this day, I always think that in order to help another alcoholic, I gotta be like Yoda or like Deepak Chopra. I gotta have some kind of spiritual wisdom. Like, if a new guy asks me a question, I gotta have this profound answer. I have to know all the answers to everything and tell them exactly what to do. And that's just, I mean, when I try to do that, it always never ends up well. Like, and I tried that with the first few guys I sponsored. I tried to be this guru, and only one of them ended up staying sober. And I think that's because he got another sponsor. When I'm the most useful to other alcoholics is when I'm just being honest, you know. And honesty is not, it doesn't feel like that, because for somebody like me, who's, you know, I've got a pretty decent sized ego, like most of us here. And, you know, I've always had this preoccupation with what other people think of me, being honest with somebody else, especially somebody I just met, that's not an easy thing to do. But I found that that's what my sponsor did with me. And that seems to work the best, which, you know, it pretty much just says that in the big book. So if I would just do what it says in the big book, I'd be fine. And I wouldn't have been talking about it for the last 3 minutes. But I, you know, it kind of amazed me early on how, you know, I would, because I didn't think I was going to be able to help anybody. I was just like, man, my sponsor would tell me to go help guys and be like, you know, why don't you go give guys rides to meetings? But I was like, okay, I got a car that I can do. But then he would be like, why don't you, you know, start calling guys, asking them how they're doing, you know, talk to them about their drinking, and then eventually sponsoring people. And I'm just like, how do I do that? I'm such a mess. Like, I don't know anything. And he was just kind of like, you'll be fine. And that's true. It just amazed me how many guys that I would, they'd talk to me about their problems. And, you know, I would be honest with them about myself. And I would think, like, well, I'm never going to hear from that guy again. And then they'd call me again and then with another problem. And I'd just be like, are you still drinking? Like, but I mean, that's just, I don't know where I was going with that, but it's just like, I think that's the core of AA is my point. It's just honesty. And then since then, yeah, I kind of ate up a lot of time there, but that was a long time ago. I've been sober in AA since then. I've never left. I've had the same sponsor. I got a home group when I first started working with my sponsor, Eric. I was there for about a year. And then after that, I left there and went to my current home group, which I think was 2013, 2014. I've been there ever since. And AA, it's absolutely changed my life. And I don't, it's probably a good thing that I'm not going to get into the details about that. Cause anybody that's new, you know, I guarantee there's not a lot of guarantees that we get in life. And, I try not to make a ton of guarantees in AA, you know, cause another thing that one of my pet peeves is when people get up and speak, they're, you know, they're always like, wow, I just have this, they talk about like the stuff they have. Like I have a great house and a great job and a great family. And, you know, I got one out of two of those things, and I'm sitting there in the back just being like, well, I'm 15 years sober. Why don't I have that? But that's not that we're not promised any of that in AA, but what we're promised is a decent life, a good life. The kind of thing that I didn't think was possible when I was drinking. And so, you know, I don't know if anybody that's new, I don't know what your journey in AA is going to look like, you know, what you're going to get or not get, but I can guarantee if you do this, go through the 12 steps and stay here, you are going to get that. But I've been through, at the time I've been sober, it's hard to describe. I mean, I just never, there was a point when I never thought I was going to be able to live a normal life. I thought I was just going to be a deadbeat living on people's couches forever. That just seemed to be what I was good at. And I've just through the steps, I've been able to do things I never thought I'd be able to do. I mean, my sponsor used to actually he still does. He goes up to Alaska every year. There's a big AA conference out there. One year he took me and a bunch of guys that we sponsored up there. And I just remember thinking, like, you know, we're in the middle of Alaska in AA, like, you know, in an AA meeting. I just, you know, you never thought you'd get there. I've been to one of the things that I love to do is travel. And you know, I've been to AA meetings on four continents. And it's just like, it always amazes me that no matter where I go, that there's always AA there. And you know, it's just, I don't know, it's the coolest thing. And I, you know, the life that I have today is just, it's crazy if you think about it. And I don't think about it as much as I could or as I should, cause I get too caught up in stuff that I don't have sometimes. That's still kind of a thing. Like, you know, I'll complain about the weather last month has been crazy. There was a while where the city of Richmond ran out of water a couple weeks ago because we weren't used to everything freezing. And, you know, I'll kind of get sidetracked on little stuff like that. And I won't look at, you know, the fact that I'm, you know, I get to go through life without having to worry about drinking. You know, I can wake up and, you know, live a day like everybody else can. You know, today I woke up and I signed up to do this race with a friend in AA. you know, I didn't have to worry about whether I was going to go to the liquor store. I just went out and we went out and ran for a while. And it's funny hanging out with people in AA. Like we're doing this race in this park in Richmond, and we're shooting the breeze. And halfway through it, I realized shooting the breeze in AA is very different than shooting the breeze with regular people. But like when regular people just, you know, chat, they're talking about like their kids or like remodeling their bathroom and how stuff is going. And we're talking like very loudly about AA. So we're like, yeah, I mean, stuff like, yeah, you know, he's dead. She's drunk. He's in jail. Like, and then, you know, we get into like really deep, like stuff, talk about emotional sobriety. And at one point I looked around and I realized everybody around us could hear us. And I was just like, these people probably think we're insane. Like they probably think we're in Scientology or something. I just thought it was really cool. And then back in the day, not even back in the day, a few years ago, I would have gotten so self-conscious about that. But I mean, today I was just like, man, that's awesome. You know, this is the coolest thing that could happen. Anyway, I think I'm kind of running out of steam and I'm about out of time. So I'm going to wrap up. Hopefully that was okay. I'm sure there'll be another guy from my home group that'll speak. So if you didn't speak at some point soon. So if you didn't like that, he'll probably be better than me. I appreciate you guys having me. All right.